Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Right, time for the gathering now. This week I'm joined by Fine Gael TD for Dublin Bay South, James Gagan, People Before Profit Solidarity TD for Dublin West, Ruth Coppinger, and political correspondent with the Sunday Times, Claire Scott, along with political columnist with the Irish Independent, John Downing, all joining us on the phone this week because of the various restrictions that are in place. Let's talk first of all about the decision, John Downing, I'll come to you first, on the cabinet positions. Was everyone caught on the hop by this call by Micheál Martin to move Dara O'Brien out of housing and into transport?
Eyebrows will be raised. I thought Dara O'Brien had taken the bad look off housing from a government point of view. Then we got coincidentally, we get the CSO figures yesterday, Central Statistics Office figures, which say there was a decline of 7% in housing output last year and nearer 30 than the slated 40,000 houses. Housing remains chronic.
John, your line isn't great. We'll try to get you back. Obviously, we're all dealing with communications issues here this morning. Claire Scott from the Sunday Times, I'll come to you on that one as well. What are people saying about the decision to put James Brown in housing?
I think there's general surprise about the move. I think there was, you know, the idea was there that James was going to be moved up. He played a role in the programme for government negotiations. So he was in line for cabinet positions, certainly. But I think one of the steadfast positions everyone was assuming was going to be that Dara O'Brien was going to stay within housing, particularly when the programme for government itself hasn't shown any demonstration that there is going to be a step change in housing. It was very much going to be a continuation of the same. So who better to continue on doing that than Dara O'Brien? As John was saying there, the CSO figures suggesting that there has been a drop in housing delivery last year when government had promised 40,000. It's not a good look. I don't necessarily think that is the reason Dara has been moved out. Dara seems to be very happy with his position now in transport. But it is still a shock to all of us.
I think those figures really were jaw-dropping yesterday in the midst of the election of the Taoiseach. James Gagan, I might come to you that, you know, we had this commitment and it was Simon Harris himself who said in the Dáil very recently the government still expects to deliver nearly 40,000 homes this year. You didn't. You delivered 130,000 homes in 2024. It's just shocking, really, isn't it?
Well, I think it is important, first of all, and good morning, and I do want to sort of acknowledge the work that's going on out there right now by the first responders, even in my own constituency and the Dublin Fire Brigade, and just my thoughts are with everyone. But I think it is important to reflect on the fact that over the last 5 years, there were over 111,000 homes built during that period. And even in the disappointing figures, which must be acknowledged, there is an increase in the number of starter homes. And all of the forecast for next year is that the number of homes are going to increase. And we have pledged in the programme for government a delivery of over 300,000 homes up until 2030.
Do you know what it is, though, James? I'll put it to you this way. It's over-promising. That's the problem. That really gets to people. Don't say it's going to be 40,000 if it's going to be just over 30,000. It shows that you've kind of got a slipshod attitude to this problem.
Well, I think the evidence would suggest differently. I mean, it is the case that right now there's 500 first-time buyers buying their homes every single week. And, you know, 2 years ago or even a little shorter than that, that wasn't the case. And that is because of the number of homes that have been delivered over the last 5 years. But everyone acknowledges, of every party and every stripe, that we need to do an awful lot more. We need to deliver a huge greater number of homes. And one of the ways in which we can improve on the cost issue, which is a big impact on the number of apartments, which I think contributed quite significantly to the shortfall this year, is addressing the construction costs by improving the planning process. So that's what the Comprehensive Planning Bill is all about. It's about ensuring that.
Okay, we know about the planning bill, but it's the figures really that speak loudest this week. Ruth Coppinger, what do you think this change in the cabinet minister who will be in charge in housing? What does it say about the government's attitude to the problem?
Well, I think this is not about personality. This is about policy. And as long as the policy of leaving the housing provision in this country in the hands of the private sector is the main policy, the horror for people on the ground remains. So, for example, in my own constituency, while I was canvassing in the local elections, I met a student nurse who told me, you will not meet anyone over 23 in this area, that young Castleknock is in Australia. And that's the reality. Every time they're asked about this, they recite all of the people who are buying houses. Teachers, nurses, essential workers can't even afford to buy homes, never mind lower paid people.
Well,
and the only way that will change is by the state taking a lead and providing housing, using the land banks that exist.
But James and his colleagues will say that there are 500 families a week buying their first home.
And they're... Fair play, I'm delighted for them. Many of them also are probably investors and landlords, and those who are able to have to go through a very complex mechanism whereby the
these are first time buyers, 500 of them a week. Does that not show you that something is working here? May not be perfect, far from it, but that it's starting to change.
It's really an indictment when relatively well paid workers like therapists and, you know, social workers, paramedics, teachers can't afford to live in this country. In Fingal, for example, we have two major land banks just in my local area that have been sitting undeveloped. One of them could provide 7,000 homes, but it's on the long-term strategy of the council. That needs to be short-term strategy, and such land banks like that could be the priority of a state building company if one existed. And we need to demand that the policy changes. We could end this. We have the money, we have the land, but everything has been left up to developers and to the vulture funds and investment funds.
Okay. Just coming back to the appointments that were made to Cabinet, Clare Scott, and the opposition immediately latched on to the fact that there were so few women in senior Cabinet roles this time round. Is there genuine outrage at that, would you say?
I think so. I think it was particularly evident yesterday, just seeing the new ministers walk in and seeing only three women in senior cabinet positions, I suppose, two in super and junior positions, so will have a role in cabinet. But ultimately, I think the fact that it's decreased on the previous government, the presence of women, it was remarked that this is 2025. I think the Social Democrats were quick to put out a statement about the fact that we're completely out of step with the rest of Europe in relation to the presence of women, in the Dáil chamber as well. As in cabinet, so there's genuinely a frustration about that, and I think it's not the last.
Okay, all right, Claire, your line now is wobbling on us. John Downing, can I bring you in on that? I mean, John, so we have heard said before, and if we look back to Micheál Martin's last cabinet appointments, the last time out in 2020, he was ruthless when it came to geography. He just puts the people in there, you could argue, that he thinks will do the best job. Is there more to it than that?
I think there is. I think in this day and age, it's very disappointing to see the number of women actually with full cabinet rank actually decrease. I smiled when I read the Social Democrats said there are actually more people called James with full cabinet rank, James Brown, James Jim O'Callaghan, James Lawless in cabinet than there are women. To fuse criticism from the Social Democrats and Pather Tobin, it has the look of an East Coast boys club. And if you look at the geography aspect of it, there's a minister in Kerry, there's a minister in Mayo, and Sinn Féin. So I think he's going to have to, they're both going to have to look very closely at both geography and gender in trying to, when they announce junior ministries next week, try and balance things out. Though, all that being said, we only have one in four of the TDs are women at the moment, and one in five have full cabinet rank. So there's an awful lot to be done, despite the 40% gender quota rule that we had in the election on the 29th of November.
Mm-hmm. James, are you disappointed in Micheál Martin's picks here now that we have, you know, a position or a situation allowed to develop where John Downing can say this is an East Coast boys' club?
The Cabinet has a job to do. It has a job to deliver on the programme for government that has been negotiated in all of the key areas of housing, of the economy, of small businesses, of childcare, of disability. You know, in our own party, it is the case that every single woman TD that was re-elected or returned, that each of those women are serving in Cabinet. And of course, we've seen the elevation of Jennifer Carroll McNeill to the very significant portfolio of health, who's a very experienced minister and someone who's going to be a very effective minister. And, you know, we need to get on now with delivering for the programme for government, delivering on what we have agreed between the parties. The leaders have made their respective choices. But what I also would say is that, you know, the ministers of state have not been appointed yet. We know from the last government that there were a number of effective ministers of state. And what's going to be absolutely essential, if we are going to make the kind of delivery that the voters will be demanding of us, is that we have really effective ministers of state working across each of these departments. And, you know, when we see the full rollout of government, I think we should hold judgment until we see the final minister.
Ruth Coppinger, are you willing to hold fire until we see the minister of state line up?
Well, it's clear that women are an endangered species, particularly in Fianna Fáil, and also it would appear in this government in general. So Mark Zuckerberg made a call a week or two ago that we needed more masculine energy. So it seems like the government has heeded his call, because what I saw last night was like a picture from the 1950s. Last night I attended a meeting on gender-based violence, for example, that I hosted, with a number of survivors speaking. There's real burning issues that need to be addressed. We have an epidemic of violence against women. And yet, Micheál Martin sees fit to turn around and deliver a cabinet like that. In the UK, for example, they have a dedicated ministry on violence against women. This government has indicated it has not a jot of interest in that issue or any of the other systemic inequalities facing women in this country.
Was there not a lot done under Helen McEntee in the last government when it came to gender-based violence?
No, there wasn't really, to be honest, Claire. I can gladly come on and talk about that again. But, for example, in my area here, there's a refuge in Blanchardstown still turning away 500 women every single year. There was very little legislative change, actually. Issues like counselling notes came up. Some of the survivors spoke on that. Just, you know, horrific situation whereby your private thoughts can be used against you in a rape trial. That wasn't moved on. The whole, you know, misogynistic court practices weren't moved on. Valerie's Law, Jenny's Law, all of these things that were talked about, that's all they were, is talked about. So I'll be bringing a 10-point programme to the Dáil, supported by many of these survivors. I'm making a call for March 8th, International Women's Day, to be a huge day of action on the issue of gender-based violence.
All right, let's come back to cabinet appointments again, and Jennifer Carroll McNeill's appointment to health has been mentioned. Claire Scott, Simon Harris has made that decision, obviously, along with Micheál Martin, to put Jennifer Carroll McNeill in that portfolio. We know that she has leadership ambitions. She's come out and said that in a hot press interview, I think, in the past. It's a fairly risky department for anyone to take on, though, isn't it? Claire's line appears to be letting us down again. John Downing, can you come in on that for me?
Yeah, it's basically it's make or break for Jennifer Carroll McNeill, an extremely talented politician with very pretty stellar academic and political record so far. But yes, surviving the health department, I think, is one thing. Leo Varadkar did that, and before him, Brian Cowan. But I think we need a bit more than survival, because after housing, health has huge challenges, and there are questions about value for money surrounding the way funding for the health department is spent. I mean, it's one of the biggest recipients of taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. So a lot expected of Jennifer Carroll McNeill, and I wish her success and hope she can put a better shape on the problems facing the system.
All right, let's move to the ructions in the Dáil on Wednesday, when that row over speaking time for the independents who are supporting the government meant that the election of the Taoiseach was delayed then by a day. And then the scenes, of course, played out on the media all over the world. James Gagan, as the dust settles on that, is it not clear now that your government completely and willfully ignored the strength of the sense of injustice really on the part of the opposition to have Michael Lowry and the rest of the independent group who hadn't got government positions taking from their speaking time, from the opposition speaking time, that you underestimated the strength of feeling?
Well, I think it is important to reflect on what happened yesterday. In fairness to the Ciaran Comhairle, she took a decision that it was no longer the case that that group, even on an interim basis, would be recognised as a technical group just for the purposes of electing a Taoiseach. That took a lot of the sting out of it, of that,
but
there's no
doubt.
That
could have been done on Monday or Tuesday of this week. This could have been sorted out then.
Well, ultimately, there was a previous decision made that did allow them to be in a technical group. Then there was a decision made that they weren't going to be allowed in a technical group when she heard a lot of the submissions from the opposition. And there was a lot of coordination and, you know, between opposition and government over the night. And by the next morning, thankfully, an agreement had been found, and the scenes, the histrionic scenes that we witnessed in the Dáil the day before, there was no repeat of them. We could get on with the business of electing a Taoiseach, electing a government, and now these issues about speaking time are going to the place where they should be, which is the Dáil Reform Committee, which, as we know, couldn't have been established until a government has been established.
Well, you call it histrionics. The opposition say we put manners on the government. They can't ride roughshod over us again.
I think anyone who watched the scenes and even impartial observers that were in the Dáil watching the scenes of what took place, like, it was a really depressing moment for our democracy to witness, you know, just hectoring and shouting and screaming because they disagreed with the decision that had been taken. But look, we've moved on from that now. An agreement was forged to ensure that the normal business of the Dáil could resume, the constitutional obligation of all of us could be fulfilled in electing a government, electing a Taoiseach. We now have a government.
Yeah, we do.
That government is up and running.
Okay, listen, we'll be bringing this to an end shortly, but Ruth, just your view on that. Histrionics or necessary to show the government that they're not quite boss?
Well, Jane said it was depressing for democracy what happened, but it's depressing for democracy when a government is cobbled together dealing with someone who was found guilty of profound corruption, who received enormous payments from a billionaire. And we should have a process whereby the Ciaran Comhairle does hear and give
found guilty now. Just be careful. You're talking about the findings of the Moriarty Tribunal. There is a file with the DPP. So we need to be cautious here. But I get what you're saying in your criticism of Michael Lowry, and you're entitled to make that criticism.
Indicted in a tribunal, that's fair enough. But we all know the story whereby, behind the scenes, he was a key figure. Now, there should be a process, I agree. It's not the best, jumping up and shouting and so on. But I don't know why it wasn't anticipated by the Ciaran Comhairle and why a platform wasn't given and a process whereby these issues could be heard. Now we need the opposition to join together on other issues, you know, not just for speaking time in the Dáil, but for disability, for autism classes and so on, because it did prove to be effective. But I think it was wrong that the government underestimated how much of an issue this was. And I do think that a shot across the bows was fired by the opposition
in
terms of...
OK, well, we'll leave it there for now. Ruth Coppinger, James Gagan, Claire Scott and John Downing, thank you very much. Back after this quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.